Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now, let's savor the meaning of sitting down in a theater, shoulder to shoulder, with people from your community and sharing a narrative experience that tells us something about ourselves and who we are to one another. Plays do that. Musicians do that. Exceptional films do that. Yes, Hollywood is in the business of making myths, and it can be nostalgic and not brave enough to lead the cultural change, but sometimes they get it right. Think of how exhilarating it still is to see a character like Atticus Finch come to life on the screen.
The defendant is not guilty, but somebody in this courtroom is. Now, gentlemen, in this country, our courts are the great levelers. In our courts, all men are created equal.
I can still remember what it was like to sit in the theater and watch Denzel Washington act in the movie Philadelphia, and what it was like to sit shoulder to shoulder with people and realizing that we were watching a truth about America. Listen to this.
This case is not just about AIDS, is it? So let's talk about what this case is really all about. The general public's hatred, our loathing, our fear of homosexuals. And how that climate of hatred and fear translated into the firing of this particular homosexual. My client.
Does it get better than Denzel Washington? No. Movies can be a mirror. Sometimes they can reflect our best selves. Sometimes they reflect the selves we need to be. Sometimes they're just the comfort that we need at that moment. So, as our guests join us, I need your ideas too. Recommend a movie or a film character that shows a truth about America that can be enlightening, necessary, meaningful. Tell me about a movie that you find deeply comforting for those reasons and tell me why. Here's the phone number, 651-227-6000, on Twitter, at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I-M-P-R. Lily Percy Ruiz, executive producer at On Being Studios and host of the podcast, This Movie Changed Me. I listen. Welcome. Good to have you in the studio.
Thanks, Carrie.
Anza Achea is with us. He's a radio and TV actor. He won the 2011 McKnight Award, and he's with us on the phone line. Anza, welcome. It's good to have you on the show again.
Good to be had.
Long time. No chat. Happy to be here. Okay, so Lily and Anza, I want you both to reflect on kind of how I set this up, because I don't think it always has to be, they're showing us America and it's so fantastic and they appeal to our better angels. Sometimes that mirror shows us in a really necessary way who we are. So Lily, what do you think?
Yeah, I love the way you set it up to talk about, you know, it's not always going to move change forward, but it kind of does individually. So even your experience that you had in the theater with all the people watching Philadelphia, I bet you went home and you talked about it with someone.
Absolutely.
And they talked about it with someone. And those conversations began to maybe even change how people felt about the gay people in their life and even about AIDS. And so I think that movies will eventually plant a seed that will spark change in that way. And I think about even the most uncomfortable films like Three Billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri, which I know you're not a fan
of. Yeah, we'll talk about that.
but it's a movie that made me profoundly uncomfortable because I saw so much truth in the pain that the people in this town held with each other. And I saw that pain in my family, which is a Colombian immigrant family very far removed from Ebbing, Missouri. And it became universal and in a lot of ways allowed me to express something that I didn't really know how to express.
Yeah, Anza, I felt like I had to say sometimes Hollywood is behind the curve. Sometimes, as Lily says, they're planting the seed. Sometimes, I guess, they are ahead of the curve. How do you think about that?
Yeah, I think sometimes this, I mean, you know, it's quite a big ask for Hollywood to kind of distill either history or our imagination into an hour and a half or whatnot, and have satisfaction in terms of did they actually achieve the story in the way that satisfies us. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, I always tend to think of it through the character's lens. So I'm thinking of someone like Daniel Day-Lewis in There Will Be Blood, where you just see this epic story and how he kind of manages to make himself, you know, and through that you also see the destruction and in the wake of that rise of this individual. Or I think of his role also in Gangs of New York or those kind of, or Lincoln for that matter, where you actually see in the background the turmoil, the death, the destruction, and you also see this ascension of this individual in the midst of that. Mm. So I think it needs a couple of elements where you see history and you see this imagination come to play for us, you know, and we see it in high stakes being played out.
Call here from Nan in River Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Nan. Is there a film that comes to mind for you on this?
This one was it's been a few years. Dead Man Walking.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I went and saw this in the theater with two friends. One was pro-death penalty, the other was anti-death penalty. And when we left the theater, those two were very conflicted.
Mm-hmm. You know what else I really, Nan, that I appreciate about that film is we saw not a superficial compassion. We saw conflicted compassion, which I think is really hard to represent in film. Did that strike you?
Oh, definitely. I didn't really have an opinion going in, and I still don't have an opinion. It's a tough one.
That movie, Lily, came out when many states that had the death penalty were still executing a large number of people. Do you know what I mean when I say conflicted compassion?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Because she's not a saint. She's not modeling that,
right?
This benevolent nun caricature that could be easily played. She's really conflicted about her feelings towards this man because he did commit a crime. But the question is, does he deserve to die for that? And as a viewer, I mean, I felt that in Susan Sarandon's performance the whole time, that conflictedness that you're talking about.
I think one of the things maybe, Ansa, that we're going to get to is that movies model moral imagination,
right?
If it isn't directly in your life, you get to have that experience of moral conflict and moral imagination, and maybe that's the thing that pushes the ultimate cultural change, yeah?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I mean, I think of even a movie like Hoosiers, 1986, Dennis Hopper and Gene Hackman, where you have like this small-town scenario, and you kind of see the story of you know, this individual, and you have that moment of like, oh, wow, it's possible against all odds, you know, to have some success or have a victory in some shape or form.
You know, I'm hearing from a number of people who are talking about Remember the Titans, which is, I think of that
Denzel
as kind of
movie.
A Hoosiers. Yeah. Yeah. Jordan says, love that movie, especially when Bertier says to the nurse, can't you see he's my brother? It's been a really long time since I've watched that movie.
Same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ansa, go ahead.
Yeah. No, you know, the other actor that comes to mind who has quite a range, I think, at least with his body of work is Will Smith in The Pursuit of Happiness. Mm. I mean, you're talking about race and poverty and wealth and family dynamics and, you know, being homeless for a majority of that story. And you wonder how it's going to turn out. And you see in the end, you know, what that actually means.
Jim says on Twitter, I'll be curious what you think about this, Lily, maybe because it's the holidays, but I'll suggest It's a Wonderful Life. This was bound to come up.
Yes.
Triumph of selflessness over self-interest. It gives us our best image of ourselves and challenges us to live up to it. So how would you say that, Lily, that movie has endured? What do you think?
I agree with him completely. I mean, Frank Capra in general. Like, one of my go-tos is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, in addition to It's a Wonderful Life.
It doesn't feel irrelevant today?
I watched it recently, actually during the Kavanaugh trials when I was pretty sad.
Yeah, the hearings, yeah.
Yes, exactly, the hearings. I felt really demoralized, regardless of your opinion on it, just what was being modeled for us. I love that you use that word. What was being modeled for us was so angry and uncivil, and I just felt like I needed an escape. And it may seem like an escape to go into Frank Capra's world. You know, on the surface, It's a Wonderful Life, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington seems so idealistic. Mm-hmm. But they're actually about that conflict that we were talking about in Dead Man Walking. The thing that every one of us has to make are choices about how we're going to live our lives. And are we going to be true to ourselves and to our own morality? And what does it mean to be a good person? And, you know, It's a Wonderful Life is a Christmas movie, and yet it's about a man trying to kill himself. So it's a very different kind of Christmas movie that feels so real. You know, I love that you use the language of moral imagination, because when I think about It's Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, I think the reason why I demand so much of government and of the United States is because I saw that movie as a child.
Really?
And as an immigrant coming to this country, that movie really shaped my idea, and Jimmy Stewart in particular, made me think, oh, this is what Americans are like. This is Jimmy Stewart represents America, and Frank Capra, as an immigrant himself, was showing the best of us, the best of what is possible in America. And when you watch that, you can't help but feel hopeful, even if our current state if politics is far less idealistic.
You know, Anso, what I also want from movies like that is not blind. We're still like that.
Yes.
I want us to constantly test the ways we are failing to the ideal. And I think movies let us do that, movies like that.
Yeah, and I would also offer up that I think comedy in movies tends to do that, that you see tragic, but it's being played in a way that, you know, the stakes obviously are being managed in a different way. And I do think of someone like Eddie Murphy and maybe something like Coming to America, where you do see this immigrant that comes and it's clearly fictionalized in terms of this king and this prince. And, you know, so he definitely taps into that part of our imagination. But then you see the reality of having to work for his, you know, to be seen in American society, and then falling in love and what it means in terms of his status and aspirationally, how does he actually move through those barriers? And I think that's what we see in comedy sometimes that can be offered up.
That is such a great point. I mean, I don't watch a lot of comedies because my sense is that if I'm laughing, I'm not being serious. But boy, you just turned my head around on that, Ansa. Ansa Chea, one of our guests today, he's an actor, and Liliana Percy, she's executive producer with On Being Studios and host of This Movie Changed Me. And this is a conversation I wanted to have about the power of the communal experience, you know, going into a theater, watching a film that's important side by side with someone in the theater. I think many of us are doing less and less of that. But also this idea that movies can show us the ideal, movies can show us where we fail. I think Hollywood takes the easy way out on that sometimes, but sometimes those films bring all of that together, and they are the leading edge of cultural change. Can you think of a film that really, where that really applies? 651-227-6000. Tell me why. And on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. Here's Teresa, who says, I'll never forget seeing Get Out in a packed mixed race theater. It's a comedy. Can't recall a movie that has hit a room with more laughs and screams of terror and recognition, myself included. Did you see that by yourself, Lily, or did you see that in a theater with other people?
Well, I'm a scaredy cat. I'm afraid of they did such a good job in the trailers that I assumed it was going to be terrifying. So I actually watched it during the day at home and missed out on the communal experience, unfortunately.
How does the movie speak to you?
I saw the movie.
You did, Anza. Okay, what was it like?
Yeah, and we had a blast. We saw it twice. So it was fun the first time because we had no idea, but we went on the ride. And the second time we knew what was going to happen, and we were really picking up on the other things that were also loaded into the movie. So all this double meanings and things like that.
Call here from John in Minneapolis. Hey, John. Hi. Thanks so much for waiting.
Yeah, thanks. Hi. Thanks for this program.
Yeah.
I want to say Forrest Gump, and for two reasons. I went to it as a young man in the mid-90s, very young. I think I was maybe like 10 or 12, and I remember leaving because I thought it was sort of dumb. And then now it's one of those movies I watch at least a couple times or three times a year because it makes me laugh very hard. It makes me cry. But I want to say that Tom Hanks, for me, was really solidified as our great American storyteller from that movie because he was this tragic hero, this sort of idiot that comes out of the South. Very typical relationship between whites and blacks in the South. But he's a war hero. He loves his brother in war, this black man. He ends up giving Bubba his cut, even after Bubba dies to his mom.
That's right.
He has this ongoing love story that's tragic in that this Jenny is addicted to drugs. He comes from an abusive home. They show the tragedy of the American woman in a very real way from that time period. Mm-hmm. It's sort of the baby boom story. And then we have her dying at the end, leaving Forrest a single father. And we don't know, does she die from AIDS? It doesn't tell us. And we see this man who sort of lives the capitalist dream. But, you know, he asks his wife when she finally tells him that's your son. He says, is he smart or is he? And she says, he's the brightest in his class. Mm-hmm. And I think this really speaks to that we can, I know it's a very white character, but that's the American story that no matter where you come from, you can transcend. And I think Tom Hanks, of course, did that in a way that's, after Philadelphia, that's just really unbelievable.
Wow, John, really well said. Lily, what would you add to that? Have you talked about this movie on your
Forrest
this
Gump,
movie
I
Change
haven't.
Me?
I haven't.
Should.
Now I'm like, John, we got to get John to talk about it.
I know. What do you see in that movie?
Oh, wow. It's funny. I never saw it in the way that John was describing it. I think I dismissed it at the time.
Yeah,
so
same
right
here.
As being actually just a little bit manipulative and schmaltzy. But he's right. When you go back and watch it, there's so much more there. There's more depth than was really being portrayed. And it's probably just because there were catchphrases from that movie that became so popular
yeah,
at the time.
That's right.
And so you couldn't help but only resonate with that. And you forget about the depth and the humanity he brought to this character and how much history is packed into that movie. I mean, so many iconic moments of American history that he himself goes through. And then Tom Hanks, I agree with him. I used to really cringe because of my love of Jimmy Stewart when people would compare Tom Hanks to Jimmy Stewart. But they're right. And actually, he's a better actor than Jimmy Stewart.
Really?
Which is saying a lot for me. But he is. He has more range.
Ansa, feel free to jump in there.
Yeah, no, you know, I really like that title as well. And I have an affinity for that story. But I will have to push back a little bit because it does say something about those absent narratives, you know, in terms of people of color. And I'm thinking of a movie like Glory, where you find the story and you're like, I had no idea of the sacrifices of people of color for this, not only for this country, but also for what they believed they were doing in that action. I'm thinking of Shawshank Redemption as well. Mm. That kind of where people are broken to a point where you see the relationship come out of a need and how they help each other. And I'm thinking even of a movie like Schindler's List, where you, again, this history is being brought to life by the selflessness of someone. Mm. You know, so I think those characters where we see. Sorry, I have a call from my theater.
And it's a very weird ringtone you've got there. Let me grab a call while you answer that.
Yep.
To the phones to Brian in Duluth. Brian, you were going to talk about Schindler's List. Is that right?
I was, you know, and a great conversation. When I think about movies, I think about, you know, decent movies, entertaining movies, good movies, and then there is Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
It, to me, it just stands above all movies. As I hear the discussion, I mean, movies are the stories of transition.
Yeah.
Of somebody changing dramatically. And the best movies do that with all the subtlety and nuance and impact that can bring. And when you talk about moral conflict, Schindler's List shifted my paradigm of thinking completely on, you know, how one can advance someone else while transitioning. And then they knock it out of the park after this great movie's over with, you know, Schindler's Jews appearing on screen paying homage.
Brian, I love what you said about we are seeing the arc of character, right? Mm. Somebody coming more fully into their character, which is why I didn't like Three Billboards. But we'll get to that in a minute. Schindler's List, I mean, has he captured, do you think, what is, I think, essential viewing for more than just the incredible history of it?
Oh, yes, I agree completely. And it actually was just re-released this past weekend.
I saw that.
25 years right. since it wow. first came out. I know. Oh, way gosh. To feel old, huh?
I know.
He's so right. It's a masterpiece on so many levels. You know, it's a movie that Steven Spielberg talks about was the most difficult to make because it was so close to his family and his home as a Jewish person. And you feel his emotions in that movie when you watch it. But it also is this character study on what is possible. You know, Oscar Schindler is not a perfect person.
Mm-hmm.
And as he's portrayed in that movie, and he becomes all of us. What would we have done in that situation?
A lot of moral conflict there, right?
So many great questions, human questions that arise from that movie.
So here's why I didn't like Three Billboards, and I know you love it. For the very reason that Brian described.
Yes.
I don't think the central character changes enough. I thought it was almost tacked on at the end to satisfy an audience that wants to see that she has changed. Mm. Now, you are much more expert in these things than I am. So I
no,
really.
Carrie, you get
I,
it.
No,
you get it.
Lily, no. But so I really want to hear your answer to that.
So I disagree. I don't think she changes at the end. We're talking about Frances McDormand's
yeah,
character.
Yes, right. And she's incredible.
She's incredible.
In it, yeah.
I actually think what I was blown away by in this movie, and I cried a lot during this film. Nowadays, it becomes the only safe space for me to really sob is movie theaters. And this one got to me because of the fact that she doesn't change dramatically. She doesn't always do the right thing. And in fact,
right.
she's a very angry, resentful, just pain-stricken person. And at the end, none of that's gone away.
Right.
In fact, if you remember, not to spoil this, but they're going to go
yes.
seek revenge.
But I thought that was the little fig leaf. See, audience,
oh,
you want to see the arc of character.
See, I took it as what is going to happen with these two together? We don't really know what's going to happen when they get in a car together. Because here are two
True.
Really unstable, really just deep, pain-stricken people. And they have a gun. We don't know.
Ansa, did you see that film?
I did.
Okay, what do you make of it?
I'm going to be Switzerland here and be a pacifist. You know, I agree with both points. I do think there was a sense of almost resignation, like, let's have a Hollywood ending in a sense of, like, let's throw up an idea and never really resolve it. And I did feel, because of all the action that had preceded that decision, that it was worthy of, well, what do you do with that? What happens now? And, you know, I think sometimes good movies leave me with a question rather than a sense of, like, completion. And I'm a little bit slightly torn. It was very entertaining, but I do agree with Carrie on some points there as well.
Brent says on Twitter, seeing Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing at the
yes.
Skyway Theater in Minneapolis in 1989 was very communal. The film's connection with the audience, still relevant content, and brilliant filmmaking. Here's Mallory who says, oh my gosh, I saw Django Unchained on Christmas Day with my family.
Oh my God.
Mallory, what a holiday. And we all loved it, even my mom. It's funny, dark, but also moving. Here's Jeff who says, The Florida Project. Fantastic film. 6-year-old Mooney, as she courts mischief and adventure with playmates and bonds with her rebellious but caring mother. In a welfare motel near Walt Disney World with William Dafoe as good-hearted motel manager.
Yeah.
Do you want to throw another film into the mix here?
Well, I love that they mentioned Do the Right Thing.
Yeah.
Because on my list, that would be there. Malcolm X would be there.
Okay.
Get on the bus.
Yes.
I remember being 10 years old, probably, and watching Get on the Bus. It's a movie that's not as well known that Spike Lee did. It's about a group of men literally getting on a bus for the Million Man March. And you're just with them the whole time. And it's a group of black men. And they're all different kinds of people. They're not the same kind of caricature of a black man. And it was the first time that I, growing up in Miami, saw this. And it blew my mind, as all the movies that Spike Lee did blew my mind. Because he was introducing me to a world that was so unlike mine. And yet they felt like I knew them. They were real people in my life. And he's continued to have a career like that. And I hear about people who saw Do the Right Thing in the theater, and they talk about walking out into the street and feeling changed afterward. And yeah. And I agree. I mean, you see that movie and you can't feel anything but changed.
Ansa, I didn't want to miss talking about war movies because sometimes they are made to amplify American selflessness, right? Sacrifice. Sometimes they really show us who we are. So I asked if we could blend Saving Private Ryan with a scene from Coming Home.
Whoa.
I think, too. Yeah. Interesting mix, huh? So listen to this.
Yeah.
It's with the most profound sense of joy that I write to inform you your son, Private James Ryan, is well and at this very moment on his way home from European battlefields. Reports from the front indicate James did his duty in combat with great courage and steadfast dedication.
And now I'm here to tell you that I have killed for my country or whatever. And I don't feel good about it. Because there's not enough reason, man.
I just saw a retrospective on Jane Fonda's career, and so I was watching her talk a bit about Coming Home. So, Ansa, what does the usual war movie say to you, and are there some that really stand out as exceptional to, you know, to kind of change the culture around that?
Well, you know, I would almost say Tom Cruise, oddly enough, kind of had a nice run there with, I'm thinking of a movie that says something about war and what a hero looks like.
Born on the 4th of July? Top Gun?
And then contrast that with Born on the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I mean? There's quite a range right there where you have this image of, you know, Top Gun, where everything is slick and moves quickly and it's just full of testosterone. And you have Born on the 4th of July where you kind of see that breakdown, I think, of and the effect of war. So I think, you know, Tom Cruise or whatever else he's done, I think those are two kind of titles that come to mind.
Super interesting.
He does have great range. I don't think he gets enough credit, Tom Cruise.
Call here from Erica in Minneapolis. Hi, Erica. Thanks for waiting.
Hi.
Hey. What do you want to suggest?
I'm so glad to be on, and I don't want to end this wonderful program without saying the word Moonlight. The tremendous movie that did win the Academy Award. It did win over La La Land, thank goodness. and it's a tremendously sensitive portrayal of two black men's life throughout their lifetime and their connection. The implication is that they are gay, and I think that's pretty clear by the end. I'm a white lesbian, and I'm still waiting for the excellent lesbian movie. I'm sure it's going to happen sometime. but this was deeply, deeply soul-stirring, I think, in the United States in that year, a couple years ago, and even more so in this year, for people to witness black men having a tremendous depth of feeling and connection to each other that is rooted in love and that does need to deal with violence and difficult surroundings. It is soul-stirring, particularly with other people, but in any circumstance, I can't recommend that all U.S. folks, particularly white folks, view Moonlight more than once.
Erica, thanks much. Really glad you called in with that. On Twitter, a listener says, seeing Call Me By Your Name in theaters was incredible.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. The last scene crawled under my skin and took root there. It was particularly wonderful as a queer person to see a movie about queer love that didn't end in death. I want to squeeze Jared in St. Louis Park in here. Jared, what's your movie that you're suggesting here?
Well, it's the thing. It's actually The Sound of Music because it starts out so flowery and positive.
Yes.
And the end is they're escaping the Nazis.
Uh-huh.
But the boyfriend that tries to catch them at the end of the movie, even though he's been instilled to be so hateful and killing, can't bring himself to shoot the father of the family as he catches them. And kind of breaks down and says, I'll kill you. You know, it shows that no matter how much hate can be instilled, because, you know, he becomes a Nazi youth, you know. He can't bring himself to do it. And then George Von Trapp finally says, "You'll never be one of them," meaning no matter how much hatred can be instilled in a person, if their heart isn't in there to kill and be nasty and evil, it's still not going to happen when, you know, push comes to shove.
Right. You know, I feel like I have missed what everybody loves about The Sound of Music.
I'm right there with you.
You
don't, I also don't Ansa, understand it.
Maybe you save the Sound of Music.
Tell us.
Why do so many people love that movie?
I do think it's because of the backdrop of the dynamic of war and that story. And I think there's also a family in the middle of that. And then you also have, I mean, I have to give a shout out, you know, there's a strong female presence in that movie as well. So I think, and we haven't really spoken about stories where the women are kind of the center
so
of
true.
Those kind of
narrative. I think that would be a great show next time. All
celebrating
right?
women.
Ansa, come back. All right?
All right.
Great to talk to you. Lily, always.
Thank you, Carrie.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Programming is supported by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping public radio advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. Knight Foundation believes informed and engaged communities are essential for healthy democracy. More at knightfoundation.org.
Heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. You can add your voice to the discussion by calling in at 800-242-2828 or tweeting us at Kerri, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks!